And those of you who aren't quite the age for Sunday school, you're staying here this morning. Glad to see you. I'm going to read together from the book of Job yet again. For those who are visiting us today or just back from holiday, we've reached the end of chapter 38 and into chapter 39 today. It's taken us a while to get there, but I hope we've been enjoying the journey as God has been making his message clear to Job in all his suffering and trial. Most of the chapters so far have been Job speaking and Eliphaz and Bildad and Zophar and Elihu speaking. Last week we eventually got to that moment when God himself started to speak, and God spoke to Job about him being the God who created everything. He's the God who had managed and coped with the 500 billion galaxies are out there, and if he can cope with that, he can cope with Job. Now, in chapter 38, 39 onwards, we have God talking to Job about the world of nature. God is wise enough to make it and sustain it. So he asks Job, "Do you hunt the prey for the lioness and satisfy the hunger of the lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in a thicket? Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food? Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? Do you know the time they give birth? They crouch down and bring forth their young. Their labour pains are ended. The young thrive and grow strong in the wilds. They leave and do not return. Who let the wild donkey go free? Who untied his ropes? I gave him the wind, the wasteland as his home, the salt flats as his habitat. He laughs at the commotion in the town. He does not hear a driver's shout. He ranges the hills for his pasture and searches for any green thing. Will the wild ox consent to serve you? Will he stay by your manger at night? Can you hold him to the furrow with a harness? Will he till the valleys behind you? Will you rely on him for his great strength? Will you leave your heavy work to him? Can you trust him to bring in your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, but they cannot compare with the pinions and feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sand, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. She treats her young harshly, as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labour was in vain, for God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Yet, when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at horse and rider. Do you give the horse his strength or clothe his neck with a flowing mane? Do you make him leap like a locust, striking terror with his proud snorting? He paws fiercely, rejoicing in his strength, and charges into the fray. He laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. He does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against his side, along with a flashing spear and lance. In frenzied excitement, he eats up the ground. He cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds. At the blast of the trumpet, he snorts, "Aha!" He catches the scent of the battle from afar, the shout of commanders and the battle cry. Does the hawk take flight by your wisdom and spread his wings toward the south? Does the eagle soar at your command and build his nest on high. He dwells on a cliff and stays there at night. A rocky crag is his stronghold. From there, he seeks out his food. His eyes detect it from afar. His young ones feast on blood. And where the slain are, there is he. Lovely tour of nature as God has created it in his powerful wisdom. And we worship that God this morning. I'm not suggesting it is this, but if you wanted a chapter of the Bible to support the creation of a zoo or a safari park in Greater Belfast, I think this is a chapter you would turn to. Having given a tour of the cosmos to Job, questioning Job, did you make this? Do you know how deep the sea is? Do you know how all the planets found their part in that great universe? God then takes Job on a little tour of nature, and in the end of chapter 38 and through chapter 39 gives quite a mixture of themes from the world of nature, the animal world in particular, to show God handling that great world of which we're a part. I think the theme of the chapter is God's wisdom in handling that world of nature. If the world, the universe, those numberless galaxies out there were a way of reminding Job, I'm big enough, I'm great enough, I'm mighty enough to handle all of that. So Job, your problems are easy for me to cope with. Just trust me. Now as he takes him on this tour of nature, I think God is saying, I'm wise enough. See how wise I am in handling what you couldn't possibly begin to handle yourself. So in verse 17, God says, God did not endow her, that's the ostrich, with wisdom. She has no sense at all. It's God who's the one who provides the wisdom for her to live and move. Or verse 26, does the hawk take flight by your wisdom, Job? The implied answer, no, it is God's wisdom that has given the skill and ability that the hawk and eagle have to find their nests on high, to swoop to their prey, to do all they do as creatures made by the living God. And that, in a sense, is the theme of the whole chapter. God is not simply mighty enough to handle all the galaxies he's created and controlled, but God is also wise enough. Wise enough to manage the creatures of the natural world. And if wise enough to handle them, then definitely wise enough to handle Job and his situation. The call in the chapter to Job is absorb that wisdom. And the message to us, bottom line today, is as God's people, absorb how wise God is. And when you can't understand what's going on in your life, when you see things in the world around that don't make sense to you, when you can't work out all the intricacies of what's happening to you or to others, believe that wisdom of God. Trust that wisdom of God. He knows what he's doing. And that's the message, I think, ultimately to Job, and we'll work our way through it briefly this morning. First of all, in God's survey of nature, we can run the chapter through in about six different categories of how God operates his wisdom. I'll give you the heading and a bit of an insight and let you do your homework this afternoon if you want to take it further. Wisdom in the feeding realm, first of all, at the end of chapter 38, verses 39 to 41. God, in his wisdom, has provided the hunting instinct for the lion and keeps that food supply chain going. So he says, Job, are you the one who teaches the lions how to hunt and where to go to find their food? The implication being, no, Job, you don't know how to do that. But I do.
I implanted that in the animal world. Secondly, wisdom in procreation. Chapter 39, verses 1 to 4. God is the one who provided the range, the wide range of mating and birthing instincts in every species. They're all different, some with long gestation periods, some very short and brief, all different kinds of birthing procedures from one animal species to the next. Were you the one, Job, who's clever enough to work all that out? Implied answer, no, Job wasn't clever enough for that. Sophisticated technological advance has helped our world today just about to understand how those things operate, but certainly not clever enough to invent them or implant them in the minds of the animal world. Thirdly, wisdom in the wild, chapter 39, verses 5 to 12. Two lovely illustrations with which God teases Job. There's the wild donkey, the onager, and then the wild ox. And he's saying to Job, do you have the skill, the wisdom to take those wild animals and enable them to serve you and to work for you and to do your bit and to bring in your crops, etc., etc.? You can do with some domesticated animals, Job. What about the wild ox and the wild donkey? And of course, the implied answer is no, we cannot enable those wild animals to serve human beings. But more than that, those wild animals don't need human beings. God's given them the wide pasture lands, the salt flats. They go about their work, they go about their life, they go about their existence, finding enough to exist on in rough places, mountain crags and salt flats. But God has implanted in them the wisdom necessary to do that. God's in charge. Fourthly, wisdom in the mindless, a lovely, I think humorous illustration that God gives to Job of the ostrich. Tiny brains, so small that this ostrich doesn't think clearly about where she plants her eggs to hatch and puts them in dangerous situations where lots of them can be trampled on and destroyed. Has no sense when it comes to rearing her young and caring for them. But God enables their survival. If you Google enough times, you can find out the size of different animal brains, fascinating as that is. And then you discover that the starfish has no brain at all. But it still exists, still reproduces, still feeds itself, still protects itself from its enemies. Where does the wisdom come from? Not in itself, for it has no brain at all. It comes from the God who has created, made, and sustained the whole species of animals in the natural world. Fifthly, the wisdom in the strong, chapter 39, verses 19 to 25, the horse. And I think particularly here that the word used is of the war horse. It's a very dramatic picture. You probably need to read it a few times. It's set in poetic style. It doesn't read easily to our ways of thinking. We are not used to cavalry charges in our generation. But it's there, once you start to read through it, it's like here's this war horse that knows no fear. It seems to sense where the battle is, seems to know how to protect itself against the swords and the arrows that fly against it, and charges out with all its strength and power and might. How does it do it? Is it simply by the human ingenuity that has trained it? And God's answer actually, no, something else at work. Is it that the horse itself has brilliant powers of cognizance and ability? No, it doesn't have that bigger brain. It does it because this all-wise creator God has imparted that wisdom to it, and it's so well suited to the task. And then the fifth and last one is that wisdom in flight, the end of chapter 39, that power of flight of the hawk and of the eagle that still fascinate us today. If there's a nature program on TV, if David Attenborough is looking for some new challenge, then often it's back to the birds of flight, and especially the hunting birds like the hawk and the eagle, that still stagger the human mind now, today, in the 21st century. How do they do it? How do they know where to set their nest? How can they have eyes to see that prey, that tiny mouse in a field that's hundreds and hundreds of yards away, that isn't even moving, but the bird up on high can see it and know to pounce and gather its food? Job, can you do that? Job, do you have the wisdom to even understand it? No, you don't. You certainly don't have the wisdom to implant all that knowledge, ability, skill, instinct in the whole of the animal world. But I am the God who did it all. Stand back and absorb that wisdom, Job. This is me. This is a great, mighty, powerful God. There's also the all-wise, all-knowing God who has tuned every single animal to be what it is in the world of today. The world which God surveys with Job has its clever animals and its foolish ones. It has its strong animals and its weak ones. It has animals which are domesticated and animals that run wild. But all display this amazing, wonderful wisdom of God in their design and in their maintenance. We hear a lot of talk today about the survival of the fittest, about processes of natural selection, about evolutionary development in and amongst species. I'm sure there's some truth to be gained in all those theories. But the bottom line is there's still things impossible to explain from any of those theories just by themselves. How do the ostrich young survive? How do the starfish know how to feed? And God is reminding Job that this wonderful, diverse, amazing world of nature is God's. He's the author of that diversity. It is a living testimony to the wisdom of a creator God. You don't have to get into a complicated discussion about the hows of creation. All you do is stand back and observe that wisdom of a creator God and absorb that wisdom into the core of your being. God's survey of nature. Secondly, good learning through nature. Let's remind ourselves that Job wasn't expecting a nature lesson at the end of all his questions and troubles. For 30-odd chapters, in terms of our Bible's record, Job and his friends have argued through the philosophy and religion and theology of suffering, why it happens, and to whom it happens. All the way through that period, two answers from God were expected. Job's expectation was, God will speak and justify me. God will speak and tell everybody, and you mates especially, God will tell you, I'm a righteous person, a good person, a follower of God, an upholder of God's truth, and I don't deserve what's happening to me. Job's friends expected God to speak. And Job's friends were absolutely certain when God speaks, Job, he'll give you the telling off of your life. He'll tell you how arrogant you've been, how proud you've been, how sinful you've been, how you deserved every last bit of the suffering you've gone through. Suffering is a result of your sin, and God will let you know that. So they have expectations when God speaks. Job has expectations when God speaks, and neither get it. And when God speaks in chapter 38, it says, Job, have you thought how great I am? And in chapter 39, God answers, Job, have you thought how wise I am? Have you allowed your soul to absorb my wisdom? But God does that, so we might ask ourselves, why does God take Job down that route? Why does God speak in that way? Why doesn't he give him a direct answer to some very direct questions that have been asked? Has God missed the point? You know what it is, as you get older and somebody asks you a question, you start to talk, and 10 minutes later you say, oh, what was the question, by the way? I've forgotten already. And it's not just Alzheimer's or dementia, it's just old age. We get confused what people were wanting to hear. God hasn't got confused about what Job wanted or felt he needed to hear. God's been choosing his words very carefully. The animal kingdom illustrates an all-wise God operating for the benefit of every tiny last creature on his planet. Nature is God's visual aid. And the learning from nature, I think, incorporates several things that are still applicable for us today. First of all, these illustrations demonstrate how his wisdom is depended upon by every one of his creatures. He exercises his wisdom in the life of every single creature, whether it is the brainless starfish or the brilliant-minded, well-brained dolphin. God operates his wisdom in the foolish, senseless ostrich, which God says, I never supplied with any wisdom, through to those animals in the animal world that stagger us with their abilities to remember, to understand, to follow directions, and become very domesticated. And if little Rover is waiting for you at home today and knows when you walk through the door, you just come home from church and brings your slippers to you and then brings a paper to you, whatever, you'll know what I mean. Some animals, very, very clever. Some pretty senseless. Some able to be domesticated. Some totally wild. But the animal world survives not because the animals have wonderful brain power, not because the animals comprehend all the challenges of the world in which they're placed. They survive because God exercises his wisdom on their behalf. So when you see a nature program with some brilliant animal doing some brilliant thing, part of you is in awe of what that animal has learned, what that animal has been trained to do, what that animal has by way of natural instinct. But part of you stands back and say, what a God who enables that animal by his wisdom to survive in its context. Second, I think these illustrations demonstrate how little comprehension is needed by God's creatures for their survival. You see some little creature that survives in the middle of the Sahara Desert. It survives without water for month after month after month. And then when the rains do come or when an oasis is found, it absorbs into its being enough hydration to survive for another long period of time. And you say, well, is that because that's a very clever animal? Has it got a good degree out of Queen's University to understand how to do that? Or do you end up saying, what an amazing God who has given that animal, without education, without training, the ability to know what to do and when to do it. God hasn't given those animals a theological textbook to understand all his plans and purposes for them. But he's given them the wisdom to follow his direction and leading to survive and to thrive in his world. I think part of what's being said to Job is you don't need to have everything explained to you. You don't need to know how everything works, why everything happens in that natural world. All you need to do is believe there's a God up there who's wise enough to handle it. The illustrations demonstrate how inexplicable God's ways sometimes seem to be in nature. Why does the ostrich bury its eggs in the sand where they'd be crushed by every other wild animal in the desert? As far as I know, no modern scientist has come up with an answer to that question yet. It seems foolish, inexplicable. Why did God create a bird with wings that cannot fly? Why did God, that same senseless animal that buries its eggs in the sand and has wings that cannot operate for flight, create in that same bird the ability to outrun a horse? And God's saying all those things in this chapter about the ostrich. There are things we cannot understand, things that are inexplicable about why God in his wisdom did it that way. But the ostrich doesn't sit down and have a long conversation with itself every night. It's like, I wonder why God made me this way. I wonder why God allowed this to happen. I wonder why I'm built like that. I wonder why I'm restricted to my powers of flight. I wonder why I have such powerful abilities to run. The ostrich gets on and lives in the power of the wisdom of the God who created it that way. If chapter 38 was about seeing God's overwhelming greatness and power, this is about Job learning that God is wise enough to see the sparrow when it falls, sees the ostrich eggs that are at risk, and takes care in his wisdom of the whole process. Is God going to teach Job through this nature lesson why Job began to suffer at the beginning? No. Is God going to come to Job and say, here you are, Job, here is the theological explanation of why through that battle in the heavenly places I allowed you to go through this terrible tragedy and crisis upon crisis through which you've come? No. All God's going to do is say, I am an all-wise God. I know what I'm doing. Trust me. Here, nature is the picture of that immense variety in which God handles his creatures perfectly. Not all the same, all differently, but nonetheless perfectly. So some are able to be domesticated and some are not. Some possess great wisdom and some definitely do not. Some have great speed and some have none. Some are useful to human beings and some are not useful at all. But God has room for them all. In his world, God has a place for each of them. God has an interest in each of them. God provides wisdom needed by each of them and for all of them. God's learning for us through nature. And lastly, to close off this morning, godly responses to nature. How does Job respond? We didn't read it, but it's the first two, three verses of chapter 40. Didn't read it because I wanted you to imagine that you're Job for a minute. And some of you have suffered enough to think, yeah, I pretty well am like Job. And for days, certainly, weeks definitely, maybe even months, in this conflict argument with your friends, you've just been longing for God to tell you what you're very sure is right, and to tell your friends how up the creek they are and how good a person you really are. You're just waiting for God to say, like, if only God would speak. And all the time that's been Job's great theme, all the way through chapter after chapter after, if only God would speak. Now God has spoken, and you might say, well, I wonder how Job now feels. And what we sense right away is not an air of disappointment. God's shown him the cosmos and said, I'm the great, mighty creator of it. He's shown him the world of nature and said, I'm the wise God who ordered that. And Job says, hey, hang on, God. I was expecting you to tell me something different to that. I'm really annoyed with you, God. I'm upset because I was demanding a different kind of language, a different kind of conversation with you. Nothing like that comes from Job's lips. There's no argument with God. No self-defense before God. No plying God with a whole new range of questions. Sorry, God, but you know, if you told me all about the cosmos, you told me all about your wisdom and nature, then why didn't you do X, Y, or Z for me in the past? If you're so clever, why weren't you clever enough to prevent me suffering the way I'm suffering? Which I think is how I would often act when things are going bad. Lord, if you are powerful enough and if you are wise enough, then why didn't you stop this happening to begin with? Instead, when Job does respond to God, he acknowledges his own talk has been foolish and he recognizes his own demands of God quite inappropriate. And what he says is, here's a Job who wants God to keep on speaking. He's not saying, God, shut up, I've heard enough. You're not going to answer my question, so I'm going off and huff. It's, God, I've been stupid asking the questions I asked. I've been foolish thinking the way I was thinking. Speak on. Tell me more. His mind and his heart are, through this tour of nature, being lifted above the troubles of the present moment. As though life itself is gaining a new perspective. He's seeing the worth of God as God. Goes right back to the very heart of the book. Satan's challenge was, does Job love you because you're God or just because you're good? God says, take everything good away from Job and he'll still love me because I'm God. And here I think we find the proof of it. God isn't giving him simple answers, simple explanations. All God is doing is showing him his might, his power, his glory, his wisdom. And Job is absorbing that and loving it. He says, that's the God I worship. That's the God I know. And that's the God I love. And I'm sure that's part of what God's saying to us today, that the world of nature is there to help us focus on the Creator God whose power and wisdom lies behind it. Lots of our songs and hymns, especially children's ones, have got that message, all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the Lord God made them all, each little flower that opens, each tiny bird that sings, he made their glowing colors, he made their tiny wings. Or if you go back a bit more in your youth, how dearly God must love us in this poor world of ours to spread blue skies above us and deck the earth with flowers. There's not a weed so lowly, nor bird that cleaves the air, but tells in accents holy his kindness and his care. We've lost that in our modern hymns and songs, but that the world of nature is not some amorphous thing out there that has no connection with Christians. It's part of the demonstration, the visual aid of God's power and wisdom that helps us to believe that that's what God is always like. My encouragement to you today is to watch the nature documentaries, to wonder at the divine handiwork revealed. And then to know and remind yourself that the same wise God made you, the same wise God provided for you, the same wise God planned for you, the same wise God has guided you, the same wise God has put all the instincts and natural abilities in you, the same wise God has allowed all of life's circumstances to come to you as they have done and absorb that wonderful wisdom of God. And when your eye hit those moments in life, those experiences in life that are inexplicable to us, to bow before that loving wisdom of our God, to be not annoyed at it, but simply amazed by it, to stand in awe of this God and believe that wisdom's working in the darkest moment just as powerfully as in life's brightest moment. Let's pray together. Forgive us, Father, for those times when we think our brains, our mental capacity, our reasoning and abilities are such that we can handle all that you are and all that you're doing, and particularly what you're trying to do in our lives. Grant that humility that bows before you to say how good is the God we adore, how great is our God, how wise the one we worship. We pray in Jesus' name.